It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. Very happy to have a great show for you. A matinee special, if you will, kind of like if you have baseball and a guy that loves baseball and like we do is here with us. But we're going to be talking about a different sport, a sport that he knows extremely well, and that's basketball. Right, Bubba?
Absolutely. I'm excited to have East Carolina Associate Head Coach and Recruiting Coordinator Steve Rockeford on the program. Coach, welcome in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back, Coach. Very excited to have you on. I was telling you before, no secret to most people that my favorite sport is basketball, and I love what you're doing in Greenville. I appreciate you. I don't think that we get enough a chance as fans and media to thank you guys for really, I hate to hear that term, building a culture, but I don't know the term right now on the top of my head of what you guys are doing in Greenville. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for everything you guys are doing there.
Well, it's been, you know, work, you know, coaches are weird creatures anyway. So, you know, we like to work. We like to recruit. We like to get to know these kids, and you know, it's exciting to come into a place that's excited to have you, that's looking forward to having some lasting success.
So Coach, you talk about recruiting over the last 4+ months now. You haven't been able to hit the recruiting trail like you love to do. You've been doing everything virtually, be it over the computer, iPad, cell phone, what have you. So just talk about that and how that process is going.
Yeah, I mean, What it's done is we've done a lot of Zoom calls, a lot of FaceTimes, a lot of emails, a lot of virtual tours, a lot of FaceTime tours, a lot of text messages, a lot of phone calls. You know, that's really what it's been, and watching a lot of tape. So, you know, that's really what it's been. You know, where you would normally be traveling and go and see people live, you're watching people on film. And where you would normally have people come on campus and visit, you're giving them virtual tours and FaceTime tours. So, you know, everything's an adjustment. Life's an adjustment. I think we adjusted really well. And, you know, it's been good.
Yes, Coach. That's the thing with as far as recruiting goes. I know there was 11 players last year coming in and definitely transforming the program. From your eyes as the recruiting coordinator, what do you need to do this coming season? That are you happy with the pieces that you have and the ones that you're bringing in?
Well, you know, from a standpoint of recruiting and basically everything else, you know, what I always like to say, and I've been a head coach before, is you're being successful if your head coach is happy. You know, so, you know, everything that we do, we're trying to give Joe's vision to parents and to kids. We're trying to give Joe's vision to our players. And I think we're being very successful with that. Joe is a really good coach. I think people around here know that because of the first time that he was here, he did a really good job. I think everywhere he's been successful. He had a great run at Gulf Coast. And he's bringing everything that he's done through the course of his. Clicker. Am I still there?
There you go.
The last sentence or so, we lost you.
Well, I just think that Joe has been successful with his culture, with his style, with his system everywhere he's ever been. And so it's our job as assistants, as players, to continue that, you know, here. And he's a really good coach. And what I like to say about turning programs is you have to have a really good head coach and you have to recruit good players and they have to buy into what the head coach is selling. And, you know, I'm happy to be here with him. But again, you know, we're trying to make Joe Dooley happy.
Coach, and how are you?
One of the
how well are you doing that?
As of today, I think okay, but you know that's a daily process.
Right.
Coach, one of the guys you had the opportunity, you and the staff landed, a guy from the Northeast, Noah Farrakhan. So just talk about, I know he's an extremely high profile recruit and very well known. So as someone who's done this for an awfully long time, just talk about when you land a guy of his caliber. I've seen multiple recruits now. I know I can't mention those names, but just talk about, I just know it has a tremendous impact, and it's certainly held true, and guys making comments about Noah Farrakhan is going there, so I know they're doing something right.
Well, he was a highly rated recruit, a very talented player, and he's also the type of player that other players know. And, you know, whenever we signed him, I think it gave us some credibility across the board that were guys that played against him, guys that have played with him. They really like playing with him. They know who he is. They know that he's a talent. And, you know, a lot of these recruits and other people that we're talking to all over the country, you know, they're excited about him being here.
And, Coach, very fact, a kid like Farrakhan can really – you already have Jaden Gardner. You have some nice pieces already, but you have a kid like Farrakhan come in, that may be the difference in finishing middle of the pack of the American, or who knows, even where you have a chance to play beyond the conference tournament.
Well, and that's what we're trying to do. You know, what you're trying to do to make a program sustainable is be good enough every year to be in that top four or five. Because if you're one of the top four or five teams in any league, you have an opportunity to win that league, you know, depending on, you know, how close games go, depending on injuries. But if you're talented enough to be in the top four or five, then you legitimately have a chance to win the league. And I think that's what we have to concentrate on. You know, that's every league is different. It's like when we went to Virginia Tech, you know, the thing, you can get overwhelmed sometimes by what you're trying to do. And when we went to Virginia Tech, you know, Virginia Tech had been in last place in a really, really tough league. And, you know, after the first year, the thing that I said to Buzz was, you know, in that league, we don't have to come from last place to first place. We have to come in seventh place. Because if we can get in the top seven or eight, we're going to the NCAA tournament every year. And quite naturally, as coaches, you want to have a chance. You know, in a perfect world, you're trying to play for a conference championship, you're trying to play for a tournament championship, and you're trying to get to the NCAA tournament every year. So you have to figure out in your league, you know, what is that? And I think that if we're good enough to be top four or five, you're good enough to win the league, and you're good enough to go to postseason every year.
And it looks like, Coach, even the great thing about the American is such a good league and so well-respected, it looks like three or four – bids to the NCAA tournament. And then you have, of course, the NIT. And I know there's other basketball powerhouses that would, you know, frown upon the NIT. For us, the NIT is a really big deal.
Well, I think postseason is, you know, whenever you're building a program, you want to see results. You want to see yourself getting better. And whatever we can do to get better, you know, if you're good enough to win 17 games, you're good enough to win 20 games. And if you're good enough to win 20 games, you're good enough to be in the mix to do a lot of really good stuff. And if you can go to postseason play, especially in the early stages, you know, if it's going to the NIT, then you have something to build on. And once you go to postseason, then anything can happen.
Coach, taking a look at the roster, we've already mentioned Noah Farrakhan coming in. Also, you had Derek Kwanzaa, who had been in the fold for quite some time, and then a couple of preferred walk-ons, and Brendan Kelly, a legacy recruit, son of former Pirate point guard from the 1980s, Jeff Kelly, and then also Dylan Blake from First Flight out on the Outer Bank. So talk a little about those guys, and then also just what your needs are going to be for that 2021 class, because I know you're losing a little bit more this year than we did this time around.
Well, I think what you're looking for and those guys that you mentioned are guys that fit into what you're trying to do. And, you know, with Derek, he is a big guy that's very athletic, that plays really, really hard. And so anytime you can get somebody like that, you know, hopefully a rim protector, a rebounder, somebody that plays extremely hard and is athletic, it's a good get. I think with those other guys, what you're looking for is pass, dribble, and shoot guys. You know, as you continue to build, you look at the holes that you have and what you need to try to fill. And I think everybody knows the last 2 years, we haven't shot the ball from three very well. And we've got to continue to get better with that. We got to continue to add people that can shoot the ball. And that's really what we're looking for. That's what we're looking for now. That's what we're looking for in the next class, you know, in the class after that. Guys that, you know, can pass, dribble, and shoot. Guys that are multi-position guys. And guys that understand what we're doing and where we think we are.
And Coach, I was speaking of three-point shooting. I was telling Bubba, look, he's the stats guy. I'm not at all. He's the guy that knows all the stats, and I'm the guy. And I said, Bubba, even I can look at if you have two or three more threes in a game, we could have won a lot more games last year. It was so close. And then, you know, you look at in one of those things where there's so many open shots that if we can have more of those fall, then all of a sudden we go from only winning 10 games, 13 games in that range to where we could win, like you were talking about, more of a 18 to 20 win team.
Yeah, and I think that we played a lot of close games last year. You know, I think it was 8 games that were decided by 6 or less. And whenever you do that, that means that you did get better. You're in those games. Now you have to find a way to win those games. And, you know, I think the simplest thing for us is get, you know, make more threes, like you said, shoot the ball better from the floor. And I think Jaden, you know, his development is really going to help us with that, because anytime you have a guy on the floor that's going to command a double team, that's going to open up shots for other people. And I think if you move the ball, the more open shots you get, the more shots you're going to make. The more shots you make, the higher percentage you're going to shoot. The higher percentage you shoot, the more games you're going to win. And that's basically it.
And Coach, adding to about Jaden, I was very upset. I know I'm a member of the media, but I was very upset he didn't get player of the year. I thought he deserved player of the year in the league. I couldn't believe that he didn't make it. But I guess judging by his social media post, the great thing about that kid is that he always seems to be the first one in the gym, the last one in the league. So I get to leave. And I guess that gives him a chip on his shoulder where his junior year, that he's really going to go off and blossom even more than his sophomore year.
Well, I think he came in as a freshman and probably surprised some people as far as what his production was as a freshman. He improved to a sophomore year. His numbers speak for themselves. And I do think he's a hard worker. He's a good guy. He's a high character guy. And he's going to continue to get better. So we're lucky to have a guy like that. We're lucky to have a guy like that to build around. And, you know, I think he's a guy that people like they want to come and play with him because they know what type of player he is. And I think the best is yet to come. You know, I think his next 2 years are going to be really good for him and really good for us.
Coach, until the last 2-3 weeks, something like that, you hadn't seen these guys since, I guess, March 11th, March 12th, when you guys were leaving Fort Worth and coming back to Greenville. And then all the guys, well, not all of them, some stayed in Greenville, but then a lot were going home. So just talk about, I believe, all the teams back on campus now. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then just talk about what's going on with everyone back in Greenville.
Yeah, I think we did a really good job. Joe did a really good job of staying in contact with all of our players, with all of our players' parents. You know, we made a concerted effort to do that, to make sure everybody was safe and healthy where they were. Some guys had opportunities to continue to work out where they were, and they did a good job with that. Once they came back, everything was voluntary. They could work with our strength coach. So they came in and shot, they lifted, and they've done a good job with that. So we did as much as we possibly could. The coaches couldn't be there. But I think our guys did a good job with that.
And Coach, I want to ask you, as far as your opinion, and obviously you're the associate head coach and recruiting coordinator, as far as the players are concerned, how well do they come back as far as being in basketball shape or just shape in general?
Well, I don't think anybody, you know, once you take that type of layoff, I don't think anybody can be in tip-top condition. And I think Joe's done a good job with that too. You know, he realizes that these guys are not in the physical condition that they need to be in. I think our job moving forward is to do whatever is allowed to do to the best of our ability without injuring anybody. You know, you're not going to win games, so to speak, in July, you know, and, you know, I think it's key for us to have these guys as good as they possibly can be individually, to be as good as they possibly can be as a group, and stay away from injury.
I was going to ask that very thing, Coach, with as far as now, another concern I have is that very fact is that you can push them hard, and then all of a sudden, with the very fact of what if the season gets delayed to where you don't start to January? And so that's one thing that I've been worried about is injuries with our student athletes, period, no matter what the sport is.
Yeah, I just think you have to be smart with that. You know, we have to do as much as we possibly can in the smartest possible way to have these guys ready for whatever happens. And, you know, the situation is fluid. Everybody knows that. It's not just fluid in athletics. It's fluid across the United States of America, you know, just in everybody's normal life. So you're going to have to be ready to adjust. You're going to have to think, you know, out in front and have a lot of scenarios in your mind. And you just got to be smart with it. And I think we will.
Coach, we've referenced the extreme success of Jaden Gardner over his first 2 years in the program. So just talk about how you've seen that pay off and so forth on the recruiting trail, particularly in the state of North Carolina.
Well, I think anytime you have a guy that's come from within your state and he's had the success that he's had, you know, the next step is he has to continue to get better and do the things that he needs to do. And we need to do that as a program. You know, we need to step up across the board to the level that he has. And I think that's going to help us within the state. I think within the state, we've tried to recruit the state extremely hard over the last couple of years. And I think that's going to pay off down the road. I think also his success is going to pay off down the road. And I think one of the things that you can never look past is we need to start having success and wins and losses and show people that we're for real. And, you know, I think this year is a big year for us to do that.
And, Coach, this has always been a basketball state, and I think the fact that the population is growing means that there's going to be obviously more and more talent. The fact that you have Jaden Gardner, a guy that you talk about you can build around, Cy Seymour, friend of the show, and obviously we think a lot of Cy. He always talks about the very fact of that with all the players in the state of North Carolina, he always brags about you guys, coaches, that you guys know every player in the state and a lot of players around the country. But for the very fact that you can only those big blue blood programs, of Duke or North Carolina, for example, they can only get a handful of guys every single year, and there's a ton of talent. I mean, there's a ton of talent in Pitt County and Lenoir County with Kinston, which is just not even a gas tank away.
Well, I think you have to always recruit from within. You know, you start as close as possible and you build out. You know, you look in the immediate area, you look in the state before you go into other states. You know, and we're going to continue to do that. You know, I mean, we're working hard to know all the players. We're working hard to recruit all the players. But what happens is other people are recruiting those guys too. You know, they know that there's good players here. There's other people coming in besides, you know, Duke and North Carolina and North Carolina State. You know, there's people in the ACC that have recruited the state of North Carolina. And whenever you have good players in your state, everybody is going to recruit those guys. And I think that's why it's important for us to continue building on what we're doing. And continue to show improvement in every way, shape, or form so that those guys will feel good about what we're doing and we'll have a chance to get them.
Another thing that comes to mind, Coach, is the very fact that I'm sorry, I just want to add this real quick, Bubba. Another thing that comes to mind I want to mention is the very fact that if you have a kid that could be sitting on the bench in the ACC, but you have a kid that can start in the American. The American's a great league, and I think it's very underrated. But with the, you look at with the, I'm just amazed that with the time I was a student in East Carolina, where we were only on a few games a year on television, to now where I can watch a game on my phone. Are you kidding me? On ESPN, on the different platforms, ESPN. So how big a factor does that play when you have a kid that maybe a local kid that normally would be at the ACC or interested in ACC, but now they can get playing time in the American and get a ton of exposure?
Well, I think everybody's different. You know, all recruits, you know, they have something in their mind that they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, that's going to depend on the individual. I think that with us, like you said, being able to play on TV, just about every single game we play, I think that's big. I think a lot of recruits ask that question. And when you tell them, hey, you know, we're going to play 31 games and 31 games are going to be on some type of television, I think that resonates with them. So I do think it's a big deal. I think everybody wants to play on a big stage. I think that playing your games on television puts you on a big stage. It also gives these guys a lot of exposure. So I think you just have to, you know, continue to recruit as many guys as you can. And like you said, there are going to be guys that think what you said. Hey, I can go here. I can make a name for myself. And I think that's what Jaden did. You know, he had other opportunities. This was an hour and 15 minutes from his house. It was an opportunity for him to come in and be able to do what he can do right away, play and help a program build and become something. And I think those are the kind of guys that we have to find.
Coach, here recently it was announced that Antoine Jackson's added to the coaching staff. He spent last year at Virginia Tech, one of your old stomping grounds. And then prior to that, it's 7 years in the American at Cincinnati. And everybody that follows the Pirates and follows this league in college basketball knows the type of success that Cincinnati had under Mick Cronin. And also he had been at UMass and then also down at William & Mary. So he has some tremendous ties in the D.C. area and up and down the East Coast. So tell us what you can about Antoine Jackson.
Well, when Joe told me that he was going to hire him, I told Joe that's the best hire that he's made since he's been here. I think that's a guy that knows the league. That's a guy that's had success in the league. He's a veteran guy. He's a professional assistant coach. You know, I've known him for a long time, too. He worked for Derek Kellogg at UMass. I worked with Derek when I was at the University of Memphis. So, you know, he's a good friend of mine, and he had nothing but good things to say about him, as did Mick Cronin and everybody else that's ever worked with him. I just think he brings a lot to the table with his experience and where he's been and where he's recruited. And I think we're lucky to have him. And I think Joe made a really, really good hire.
I know we had Coach on. I was teasing him because whenever before you guys came here, I know message boards and everybody, who is Coach Dooley? How come he's not? He's taking so much time to hire the right assistants or hire assistant coaches. And I was like, if you know Joe Dooley, you know that he's going to hire great coaches. He did. And we miss Coach Shields a lot. But hey, we've got another great coach here. And the great thing about it is that with you guys, as a rock star staff, as we always say, and then the fact that you guys are bringing in quality names as far as players, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I believe year three is the year you guys break out. I don't put any pressure, no pressure on you, Coach, but this is the year for me that I'm looking for good things.
Yeah. And I agree with you. And like you said, I think Joe's done a great job of hiring people. I think Coach Chilios did an unbelievable job while he was here. I really enjoyed working with him. Wish him and his family nothing but the best. And he had an impact on what we've done and what we're going to continue to do. And I think as a head coach, whenever you lose people, then what you have to do is go out and try to find another quality person that can come in and add to what you're doing. And I think Joe did a great job with that. And I think, you know, like I said, I think it's his best hire since he's been here. I think he brings a lot of stuff to the table that's going to help us, you know, just from the areas that he's recruited, his experience within the league, being at a school that went to the NCAA tournament every year that he was there at Cincinnati. I think that's huge, and I think it's huge for our players.
Coach, when we had Coach Dooley on, and I've heard him say this on numerous other programs as well, as far as C.J. Coleman, talk about how C.J.'s developed and continuing to develop his lower body strength and through the hips.
Well, I think the biggest thing for him is, you know, you look at the positives and then look at the things that he needs to work on. And I think he has a big body. He's a big presence inside. And he's got to continue to develop and get better. You know, with big guys, their hands and their feet are things that they have to continually work on. And I also think something that people don't talk about is, you know, the number one post move is making free throws. You know, if you have a guy that, like Jaden, you know, he does a great job of getting fouled and making foul shots. And I think with big guys, if you can post them, they're going to be tight to the rim. If those guys can make free throws, it's a huge asset to everything that you're doing. I think the thing for CJ is you just have to stay in the gym, and he does. I think you need to continue to work on everything, your hands, your feet, your post moves around the rim, making free throws, being as explosive and as quick as you possibly can be while still being effective. And I think for any player, if they want to improve and improve at a high level, then you have to put the work in. And I think he's willing to do that. And I think he can develop in a big way.
And Coach, I think it's unfair for fans. We don't understand that the fact that we live in a Pop-Tart society and a lot of the one and done players and some of the other programs and these freshmen come in, but players, just like kids, they develop at different times. And I really believe that he is going to be a very special player. And, you know, the very fact that as East Carolina, we're building a program, so we have to be patient. And then we have to be patient with guys. Sometimes a guy comes in as a freshman and they may be a sophomore or junior before you see the success on the court that we've known about him all along. And I think that's the way that Charles, I think that's the fact with him. I think he's going to be very special at East Carolina.
Well, and the thing that you hope for is guys like him that had a chance to play as a freshman, you know, they're gaining valuable experience. They're getting experience in game situations that you can talk to them about, you can explain to them, you can show them film. But until they actually do it and play against these people and see what the competition is and see what they have to do to be better, then, you know, it's hard to explain. But once they go through it, you know, you don't have to explain to them anymore what is it like to play at Memphis, what is it like to play at Wichita State. They've done it, and they've been in those games that were decided by six or less, and they know the plays that could have been made to win the game. And what you hope for is that these guys are highly competitive, that they want to win, and that they're going to do whatever it takes to not make the same mistakes over and over again, that they're going to learn from those mistakes. They're going to learn what they need to work on and what they need to improve on, and that they'll do that on a daily basis.
Coach, what can you tell us about the health of Tremont Robinson-White and then also Luke DeBeau?
I think both of those guys are we can talk about Tremont first. I think, you know, anytime a player, when their game is predicated on speed and quickness and they have a foot or leg injury, it's going to be a detriment. And I think that regardless of what you say, once you have an injury that bad and you're able to come back from it, you're a little bit hesitant. You're not quite sure if you can still do the things that you were able to do. And I don't know that he was ever 100% healthy last year. You know, I think he was probably maxed out at about 70, 75%. So, you know, hopefully And I think he is. He's a lot stronger in his ankle. He's a lot better mentally as far as feeling like he's 100%. So I think you'll see a different guy. I think you'll see a different player from him in a good way. And I think the same thing with Luigi. You know, Luigi's injury was something that he could have tried to play through, and he would have. But if it would have went the wrong way, it could have had long-lasting ramifications. And I think Coach did the right thing by talking to him and meeting with him and explaining everything to him. And it was in his best interest to get it taken care of when he did, so that he would have a chance to be 100% for us as well as after he leaves. So I think it was in his best interest to have the surgery and get healthy. And I think he feels a lot better. I think he's close to 100%. He's worked extremely hard to get back, and he's a very hard worker. He is a very intense guy, and he plays extremely hard too. And his heart's always in the right place. So, you know, you want to see a guy like that have success.
As far as Tremont's concerned, like you said, he wasn't as consistent as he needed to be, and his injury certainly had a lot to do with that. But I recall maybe 2-3 plays that he had out at Wichita State in that conference opener where you just turn your head and like, wow, where did that come from? Just his explosiveness and getting off the floor. I want to say it was maybe a tip in, but he could have jammed it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, you look at guys at where they were before they came here, you know, and that's why you recruited them. And, you know, as a freshman in junior college, he was a junior college All-American, and his numbers were really outstanding. He led the nation in steals, shot a high percentage from the three, scored like 18 or 19 points a game. Wow. And his team didn't even go to the national tournament. So for him to be an All-American his freshman year, that means that he impressed a lot of people. And that's the reason why we recruited him. So hopefully he's 100%. Hopefully he can get back to that. And I think those type of plays that you're talking about, that's what he's capable of doing when he's 100%.
And Coach, before we let you go, as far as the – what will you guys be working on as far I guess, workouts right now? I guess you can't work out right now, but when they do resume, what will you guys be doing in the summer right now?
I think what Joe will do is he'll continue to stay with a similar regimen of what those guys were doing, where they were coming in, they were shooting, they were lifting, and probably let them play together. And then when we can get on the floor with them, we'll probably start doing some team stuff that will allow us to get a little bit ahead, you know, to where everybody knows what we're trying to do, teach them a few things. From a drill aspect, from an offensive and defensive standpoint, that can put us ahead a little bit. So, you know, I think that when you have a lot of guys returning, there's familiarity there. Those guys know what to expect from Joe. Joe knows what to expect from them. Now we just have to incorporate the new guys into that. I think we have really good leadership on our team. And I think that's where we go from here.
Thank you so much, Coach. Appreciate you spending some time out of the summer with us, and very excited about year three under with you guys with the basketball program at East Carolina, and I look forward to having you back. Maybe we can have you back before the season starts.
Anytime. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
No doubt about it. Thanks, Coach. And Coach Steve Rockefort here with us, Associate Head Coach of the Pirates. And, of course, the recruiting coordinator for ECU. Now we've got a guy that's very familiar with ECU and one of our friends of the podcast, Rennie, as well. Right, Bubba?
We have Rennie's broadcast partner, Dave, Mike Corey. Mike,
right,
welcome.
Yeah. What's up, guys? How are you?
Doing
great
well.
Great to have you on.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Mike and I, last night when we were – touching base just to make sure everything was on schedule for today. We were talking about Rennie and how we love having him on the program. So it's easy to understand why you slipped up and said that, Dave.
I was saying the very fact that we have him on, he's a broadcast partner of our next guest.
Okay, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. But nonetheless, we're excited you're here, Mike. And how are things going with you? I know you're living up in the Northeast. Exactly where are you? And how are you and your family doing with everything that's been going on these last 4 months?
Yeah, thanks. No, doing well. I mean, hanging in there. We got, you know, we're up in Marlton, New Jersey. So that's where I live. And right now I'm down at the beach. My wife's family has a beach place in Sea Isle City, New Jersey. So we're just trying to hang out here and stay safe. We got a 20-month-old daughter, so we're taking her to the beach every day and just trying to, you know, get her to enjoy things. And thank God she doesn't know anything about everything that's going on, because it's certainly crazy. But you know, we're hanging in there. I mean, we're just trying to stay positive, stay optimistic. I mean, that's all you can do, you know, because it's uncharted waters for everybody. And I know you've probably talked to a million people and they're all saying the same thing, but you just have to be positive. And, you know, we are going to, you know, get back on track. We just don't know exactly when, but, you know, so good up here, and hopefully the same for you guys and your families too.
Thank you. Have you seen Snooki, or have you seen anybody in the situation there on the shore?
No. See, now that's like North Jersey. Okay. We're down South Jersey. That's a problem. Okay, everybody sees Jersey Shore. They think like, oh, it's just Jersey Shore. The Jersey Shore, that's like the northern part of New Jersey, kind of like right below New York per se a little bit. Okay. We're more like towards the middle to the southern half. So now we don't run into anybody like that.
Okay, good. That's good. You have more cred for the show than for us. Yeah. As far as, I wanted to ask your opinion as far as the, college football season, we're hearing like left and right. I mean, today, by the way, Mike, one of our games on the schedule gone. We have the third game of the year, September 19th, Norfolk State, the MEAC. We're hearing that the MEAC is not going to play football this fall. Is our understanding earlier today, we found that out. So we're without a game September 19th. Now it looks like our home game against Norfolk State. So, talk about the college football landscape right now. What are you hearing? Are you hearing anything else that maybe we don't know about, of like another conference to drop or not have a football season or fall?
No, but I mean, yeah, I mean, I think we're all going to start to see it, right? I mean, all of us, you know, first off, the Ivy League says, all right, we're done with everything. Now, I was a little whatever when they made that decision back in March, you know, with the NCAA. They're like, hey, no more spring sports. I'm like, whoa, hold on a minute. What's going on here? And then obviously it ended up being the right call. They were just way ahead of it. I'm not really as like, you know, on them about making the call to close out all fall sports. Although I'm a little upset about it, because it's the fact that we want to get this thing back going again. Like earlier, we didn't know what the deal was, and now we kind of do, and we're hoping that we get this vaccine and we get things back on track and, you know, the cases start to get better. But I hope that nobody else is just like, all right, forget it. Forget the fall. Now I'm kind of like, well, let's just kind of keep pushing back until we can. I think that's what all the conferences are doing right now. So you saw the Big Ten and you saw what they did to start, and everybody's kind of starting to follow suit. And I said this earlier on a call that I had with Rainey, actually, him and I were talking about it, and we just said, you know, I don't think they're doing it to, like, you know, screw over per se the non-conference games and those, you know, smaller schools and not pay them the money to come play there. They're just trying to buy themselves some time and push the schedule back a little bit, because all those non-conference games, like the one you just said that got canceled, they're in September. Most of them are in September, and we're really not going to be ready to play, I don't think, end of August, September, like we all kind of hoped. So those are the first to kind of go, you know what I mean? So then it kind of pushes everything back to like October. And what's in October? Well, that's when your kind of conference schedule starts out. So I think the leagues are trying to say, hey, can we push this back to when our conference schedule would probably start? And those are the games that we're going to have to see if we can, you know, get underway. And it just so happens that it's, you know, it's the conference schedule. So I'm really hoping that by October or something like that, you know, that we can kind of get going again. And I know there's not going to be many fans or any at all. But it's going to be for this year. I think the end of this year, I'm almost like, I don't want to say I'm rushing time away. I do not want to say that at all, but it's 2021 is, and I think everybody might feel like a little bit of a relief. We got this vaccine. Hopefully things are better and people are confident and okay to go out and do stuff. Until everybody's comfortable, it's not going to be the same. So long answer to your question, but I just think it's going to get pushed back. Hopefully it doesn't get canceled, but we're just trying to buy some time. And I think that's what all these leagues are doing.
Like you're saying, Mike, you're buying yourself 3 or 4 weeks. And then also one of the big things, and in my opinion, as far as playing a conference-only schedule, is also the consistency as it pertains to testing and all those protocols.
Yeah, well, that's it, too. I mean, you know, you test somebody one day, right? And then, hey, we're good to go. And then, you know, well, what about the next day? You know, what about next week? You know, where did they go? What have they done? I mean, it's really – I mean, you can go down to the micro – you know, second of all this stuff. I mean, anything really, like, you know, oh, I went to the grocery store. Well, I wore my mask and then, you know, I grabbed the thing off the shelf. Well, somebody had to put it on the shelf. Well, what were they doing? It's like, you could say anything about everything. I mean, we can't live life like that. And we don't. And right now we have to because of the virus and we're very concerned about every single little thing, which I understand. But, you know, that's why it's so difficult. You know what I mean? Like I said, even earlier on another call that I have with some other people, I said, you know, it's like, we're doing all this stuff. We're going to have all these measures. We got to do this. We got to do that. We got that. And then we're going to enjoy it. I mean, is this what we really want to do? Is this how we're going to play? Is this how it's meant to be done? I mean, I know the answer is no, because it's not normal right now, but it's like, are we going through so much just to try to make this happen? And it's just not, I don't know. You know what I mean? I want to play, obviously. I don't want to not have a season, but I'm just looking at like the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NHL and all the rigmarole that they got to go through, and half the players don't want to play, and they're fearful for their safety, as they should, and their families. So I understand. And then all of a sudden, we're going to try to get this college football thing going, and I don't even know if the schools are going to be open. Like, we don't even know if students can go back to the school. And then, oh, we're just going to have football? Like, there's just so many questions, you know, and it's just like, it is. It's very frustrating.
A very quick follow-up to what you're saying, just trying to put it all together in your mind and just think about the possibility of playing football. I heard an interview with East Carolina head coach Mike Houston a couple of days ago, and Coach Houston was just talking about how surreal it was to have a team meeting in a 50,000 seat stadium instead of your team meeting room because of social distancing. And then the Pirates, of course, trying to play on week zero against Marshall on August 29th. And then they're going to be or scheduled to start camp on July 31st. So, I mean, here you are 2.5 weeks before starting fall camp and you have to meet in a 50,000 seat stadium. It's just hard to fathom.
Exactly right. I mean, exactly what you just said. I know it doesn't really make much sense. You know what I mean? And I don't know how much you're going to be able to, you know, monitor every single little thing that happens and what gets done. I mean, you can take as many precautions as you can, but I don't know, you know, it's a lot to handle.
And Mike, that very point that you made about rushing things, not rushing things, but all the stuff that we're having to go through, same thing that us, if you, you know, in the state of North Carolina, let's say that we could only have potentially 25% of the stadium for capacity. That would be, like Bubba said, I think it's 12,700, something like that. And for us, playing these games in the fall, if that's all we could have as far as financially, our school, like a lot of schools, but in our particular case, we've had very bad decision making before with the previous administration. Now we have a great administration led with John Gilbert. But you look at the previous mistakes, then you look at a bad coaching hire, a lot of bad things we've had happen, and we have a lot of money that we need desperately. I'm wondering if the springtime, if we could have more fans by then, it would be smarter for us to wait until January, February to play the season, because that way we would, if we could have 25 or 35,000 in January, it's better to wait a few months.
Financially. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'll get back to the spring in a second, but I mean, the money, the financials, you're absolutely right. I mean, everybody's taking a hit in one fashion or another right now. And that's very damaging and it's tough. I mean, let's think of like, you look at Major League Baseball, right? I mean, you know why it took them so long, in my opinion, is that if you're the owners, I mean, you're going to play fine. Okay. You play. Well, you got to pay all the players. You got to pay all the stuff. And then you have no fans. So like, you're not getting any money. You're not getting any merchandise. You're not getting any sales. So like, what's the incentive for them? Then now they're having to pay and they're not going to make anything. Like they got to pay all the players and stuff. So it's like a very, you know, not advantageous situation for them at all. And I'm not worried about the owners. I'm just saying like, that's the money aspect. So, okay, we get back and we're going to play. It's like, well, we better have some fans, because if we don't, then that defeats the purpose, like at least in these major league sports, of getting those jobs back to the people that only get paid when they get to the game, you know, when they're working the game. Like I have a lot of friends and people I know that do games with us and only get paid when they come to the game. You know, not everybody's on a salary or a contract or, you know, a professional athlete or anything like that. So if it doesn't really help, then I guess something's better than nothing. So I definitely want to take that approach. And so, like you said, if you're going to get 12,000, okay, well, we'll do what we can with 12,000, I guess. But how do you determine who gets to come in? I mean, all your season ticket holders and, you know, what about regular sales? I mean, it's a whole nother thing you got to open up. And the springtime, I don't know. Again, we want to do it, right? Everybody wants to play. You know what a logistical nightmare that could probably be, trying to have football and then basketball and all your other spring sports? And what about all the other fall sports? Like, they don't matter? Like, would they have to get pushed back to the spring too? What about that? So you're going to run everything in the spring? I just don't think it's going to happen. And I wouldn't think it's a smart thing to do. Like, what about the staff? What about the staffing and the people and the TV and the rights and the contracts and all that? There's no way they can get everything on and do whatever they got to do and fulfill all the agreements. I mean, it's just not possible, in my opinion. And I'm not trying to be a defeatist. I'm just saying it's very, very difficult. So, you know, you cancel the NCAA men's basketball tournament, right? I mean, a week before is about to start. It's like, and it's done. It's not coming back. They didn't push that back. Like, I just think if it doesn't happen, it should just be like, okay, we can't get it done. We're going to focus on next year. It's like the NBA and Major League Baseball and NHL. Again, we all want it, but at what cost? Like, we're going to mess up next season? Like, this season would be over. Like, you wouldn't even be having the NBA in the summer right now or September or whatever. So why don't they just focus on October and November when the next season would start and see if we can get that ready to go as best as we can. You know what I'm saying? Like, almost it's like you just keep pushing yourself back. And I don't know. That was my feeling on it, you know, and it's crazy, right? I mean, what are you going to do?
Kind of shifting gears a little bit, Mike, over the last several years, one of the primary conferences that you've called action for is, of course, the American, which is one of the reasons we wanted to have you on. And so just taking a look at this league, I mean, the big push is you always hear it, the P6, Power 6, and rightfully so. When you look at things, I mean, you hear that all the time from Mike Oresko. I know Phil Steele last year, actually, even though Clemson is doing everything they're doing, he had the AAC slightly above the ACC because of the league from top to bottom. So as someone who's broadcasted most, if not every team's games in this league, what's your take on the conference as a whole?
Yeah, no, I mean, I love it. I think it's great. It's a great brand of football. I'm with you. And I think it should be rated, you know, a little bit higher. And I say the same for basketball too. I mean, even in basketball, you know, I do the American. I also do the Atlantic 10, you know, around like maybe fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth best league in the country. I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, there's 32 conferences, you know, in college basketball. So, I mean, I say that for that. For football, yeah, I say the same thing. I mean, there's so many great athletes and coaches, and teams have been successful and they've done well in postseason. and it's just the fact that, unfortunately, the fan base and the, you know, it's never going to be, well, I should say never, but like, the Alabamas or, you know, whatever. I mean, that's an extreme example because that's like one of the top ones. But that's the only reason why I think, you know, they're not getting as much respect, you know. But, I mean, I would think if we can get, you know, they got a great TV contract, you know, with us and ESPN. They got a lot of good stuff going for them. I mean, I wish people would kind of think of it, you know, a little bit more like, yeah, it's not the sixth one or whatever. I mean, it could be five or six. Like, I wish they wouldn't even have that. I'd rather just have teams and leagues and let's play. But like I said, you have to think of this as a business situation, and it comes down to money. And that's why I think, like, even the committee, and I don't want to bash them or say anything like that, but it's like, they don't want, you know, they want the Georgias and the Alabamas and the LSUs and all those teams, right? I mean, that's just what they want. They're not going to, you know, I mean, Cincinnati's great. You know, even East Carolina's great. Houston's great. I mean, but are they going to bring in the same fan support? Are they going to bring in the same money? Are they going to bring in all that kind of stuff? I mean, think about it with like the NCAA basketball tournament, right? Do we want this team is great, a mid-major, and they deserve it? Or are we going to take the blue blood ACC 500 in their conference record team and we'll put them in? You've seen it happen. I don't agree with it, but that's kind of what happens, you know? The American overall football league, without UConn now, so there's just the one group as I'm kind of looking at it here. You know, there's just so many great teams that do stand out because Cincinnati's been right there. I really feel like you guys in ECU, and I love Mike Houston. I mean, I think he's great. We've talked to him last year. He's going to be awesome for you guys. So I see ECU getting right back up there, like in years past that we've seen before. Houston's always very good. Memphis, you know, even without Norvell, I mean, I think they get, there's just a lot of athletes there. Navy consistently so good, right? Hard to play against that team. SMU. Temple, you know, at times. Tulane made a huge, you know, push this past year. They were usually like down the bottom. It's like, no, yeah. Tulane. Tulane's very good. Tulsa, you know, and they had so many close games. I mean, that team probably could have been like 8-3, you know, or 9-3 if they, you know, won a few of their close games. And then UCF, we know the drill with them, and the USF too, you know. Again, great players and great teams. So I love every single one of these teams, and at any point in time, and it hasn't been like, it's been pretty close too. It hasn't been like, oh, for 10 years they've stunk. No, everybody's been kind of, you know, right there. So I love doing games in this conference.
That very thing, Mike, as far as American is concerned, I'm very frustrated with college football because of the very fact of the whole Power Five situation, Group of Five, because I really believe that if they added, I want to see playoff expansion. Everybody, I think that most fans want it. I think it's good for your network. I think ESPN, I mean, if you add, that's like another couple games or whatever. I just feel like with, I know there's a compromise out there. A lot of Group of Five fans would even be for the fact of put the best Group of Five team in the playoffs, you know, even if we're the number eight seed per se, and then you have two at large or whatever. I mean, I don't understand why we can't have our thing at the table when I think the Americans done a great job and they will continue to win, but I think it comes down to, I believe personally the powers that be, they don't want an Alabama upset or a Clemson upset in the playoff by a UCF, for example, who wins, what, 25 in a row? I mean, how many, you know, they always say weak schedule, this, that, and the other, but there's always going to be an excuse of why a team that quote, quote, is in the Group of Five can't be in the playoff. Instead of just put them in there and make them the lowest seed, you know, the eighth seed or I think if they expand the playoff and put that would be a lot. I know it's probably going to be a handful of years before we have that, but I'm hoping they'll do that soon.
I agree with you, Dave. I mean, I really do. I mean, I think that adding some games, I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, that's going to bring in more money, right? I mean, there'd be more games, more revenue, more TV stuff. I mean, that to me, I think would take care of it right there. And like you said, get them in there, see what happens. And yeah, of course, you know, because they want the highest profile and biggest name teams, you know, in the championship game for ratings and money and all that. But if you added some games, you could also guarantee them some extra viewership and stuff and money there too, you know. And I think, yeah. I just think it could be really good. And I'm with you. It can't get expanded too big, but yeah, four is just like, I mean, again, I know why from the business side and, you know, ESPN and all that, and I don't want to speak or bash anybody on that, but that's the reason. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's not, they don't believe that, you know, some of the teams deserve it. Yeah, they may deserve it, but they want the biggest names and the best, you know, four teams at the end. Now, with that said, it's like, I don't even know why you need a committee. Like, it's so funny. Like, we have this whole big committee. I kind of laugh at it, and it's like, oh, what's the committee thinking? Who's in the rankings? Who's whatever? It's like, you, me, Bubba, Bob from the street, Joe and Billy, we could have all picked the four teams last year, right? I mean, like, what was it coming down to? Like four or five? I mean, it's like, it's so trivial. It's not even funny. It's like, it just plays itself out. Like, we have all these scenarios the whole season. Like, oh, they win and they lose and they do this. It's like, just talk to me in week 12, week 13, conference championship. But when it's all said and done, it's like, yep, Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, Oklahoma, whatever. And it's like, really comes down to like one other team, right? I mean, give me a break. Like, how tough is that? Seriously, it's not that hard. I mean, if you only have four teams, like the NCAA men's basketball tournament, that's hard. That's 68 teams. Who's playing who? What's going to be the next matchup? What region in the end? I have so much respect for those committees that do that. I just don't think it's that hard to pick your four teams if that's how you're going to do it. I mean, we hit it all the time. Oh, there's a path. There's a way. UCF, you know, they could do it. And they're not getting in. I mean, they're just not. I mean, I'm sorry. They won 25 in a row. Like you said, I don't know what you need to do. I mean, what else would you need to do? I mean, 32 in a row? I mean, 45? I don't know. But they're not going to get in.
Before we hone in a little more on East Carolina, I wanted to ask you, I know a couple of those teams when you're kind of going team by team a few minutes ago, you mentioned Navy. Obviously, last year in the Middies, I went from 3-10 to 11-2, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, turnaround in the nation. Malcolm Perry is gone, though, so it'll be interesting to see what Kenny Matalolo does in his 14th season, far and away the longest tenured coach in the league. And then you mentioned Tulsa. Like you said, Tulsa was probably the best 4-8 team in the country last year with the close calls they had. And Phillip Montgomery, who has been there 6 years now, it's win now or never for him at Tulsa.
Yeah. No, it really is. I mean, I like that guy too. You know, he had that team, that really good team. It's probably about 4 years ago now, 4 or 5 years ago. And, they weren't able to get it done this past season. So it's like, it's tough, you know. I mean, you gotta put it up. You gotta pull off those games. You gotta win those games. I mean, I did one game. I can't even remember though. But to your point, there was a situation where it just, everything went wrong, like, you know, 5-6 things in a row at the end of the game. And I'm like, how is this even possible if they lost this game? So I think they're up by like 21 or something against some team. Maybe it was a Thursday night game for that matter. But yeah, he's really, this is a big season for him. I mean, it really is.
And that very thing you're talking about, the league itself, with talked about, when you talk about Tulane and Tulsa like that, I mean, that's the thing, is I was telling Bubba and the guys, I know that some fans want to move from conference to conference, but I think if you look at the basketball and football, the American, I'll put them against, you know, a lot of other conferences as far as the league itself from top to bottom.
I agree. I mean, that's exactly right, because I thought of that when I was going through all those teams. Like you said, there's not, you know, one that's really like been the doormat or whatever, you know. And I mean, it's and every year, all it takes is like, you know, again, one or two games, like we just said it with Tulsa, you know what I mean? And you could be right there. I like how the league now is just like, you know, one division and one thing, 1 through 11, and just go from there. And then the top teams, like, you know, go at it at the end. That'll be great. But again, it's, you know, let's hope we have an opportunity to see that this season. You know, I'm not quite sure, you know, if it's going to play out that way, but, you know, hopefully we'll know very soon.
Yeah, I agree with you regarding the 11 team league. I know, obviously, in the ACC, fortunately, we haven't had this in the American. We've had good matchups between Cincinnati and Memphis, but in the ACC, the Atlantic champ, which Clemson, you're looking at them facing somebody out of the Coastal a lot of times, when, you know, with a 7-5 record or something like that.
Yeah, no, I know. That's what I mean. It's like really, and then, you know, that's a tough situation, because yeah, they won their league, but they're not even close to, you know, it's like the wild card in baseball, right? I mean, I always feel like it's like the Red Sox and the Yankees, like the top two teams in that, you know, have the two best records, and one's got to be the wild card. Meanwhile, you got two other division winners who are like 10 games back of them, you know, but that puts stock in winning your division and, you know, beating the teams that you should beat. And you know, really, just to your point, you know, Bubba and Dave, who you mentioned earlier about this with the, you know, you got to play who's on your schedule, and that's all you can do. I mean, you can make a real tough schedule, and you know, but the league is hard enough as it is, right? You know, we feel like for each team, so they can go out and play some good non-conference games, but you're not going to go play Alabama, Auburn, you know, Kentucky or somebody else. I mean, you got to play a couple others where you're going to grab a win or two, and you got to have your record up there. So like, I just can't stand when it's always like, well, strength of schedule. It's like, okay, before the season starts, everybody in the SEC has the best strength of schedule. You know what I mean? Like, who's going to beat them? Because they play 8 of their games against themselves. And all those teams are some of the highest ranked and best teams in the country. There's one conference that's like that. So I hate when they do that. Like, oh, strength of schedule. I know we're not as strong as your conference. It's like, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, when you give the credit to UCF for winning, you know, 25 in a row, it's like, you're in the conference. Those are the teams you play. They played some pretty good out of conference teams. I mean, you can only do what you can do. I mean, I'm sorry that I don't get Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, whatever on my schedule every single year. I don't play in that league.
Yeah, and you can't. I mean, I know there's some leagues in the past of basketball or different ones that they may be the only team that's good and every other team is terrible. But if you look at the American, that's not the case. I mean, UCF had some close games, USF, and there was in that run, and like we talked about Memphis. I mean, there's so many great Cincinnati's. I mean, there's so many teams that could have knocked them off and they didn't. and teams that, if you look at the American year after year after year, there's generally three or four teams in the top 25, and that's like a lot of leagues. They're in the Power Five that have a handful of teams in the top 25. So I'm not – obviously, I didn't go to UCF, but I was like, man, that's really deflating when you see a team that wins 25 straight. And then the fact that, you know, that I don't believe in the Power Five group of five thing. We're Division One, and we're doing – and another point I make to Bubba and Kyle all the time and to the viewers and listeners of the show is the very fact that we're doing exactly the same thing that the Power Five is doing, but yet we don't get the same – well, obviously we're not in the SEC. We're getting I love the – ESPN, and I love Commissioner Resco, what he was able to work out with our new TV deal pushes us way away from any other group of five. But I mean, it's just frustrating for us that knows that things could be better in college football as far as the leagues itself. And I know with what was it, the article in Sports Illustrated that had the all the different leagues of where they should do realignment now, where they had the, what was it, 12 teams in a league, Bubba? Was it 10? Yeah, I love that article.
Sure Mike probably saw that, Dave. I think it was Pat 40.
Pat 40, yeah. Mm. Yeah, but they had it where they had, like, one of the things the ACC schools in North Carolina don't want is they don't want East Carolina to ever surpass them when it comes to football. And so they'll never have East Carolina in the ACC because of that very reason. It's not about geography or the whole we already have the TV market. That's such BS. What it comes down to is – when East Carolina is really good, we can beat up on the ACC schools. And I'm not anti-ACC. I'm just saying that it was funny that he had like Duke and Carolina and State in there in that same league. I was like, that would be nuts. That would be really crazy to see that league. I don't think it's going to ever happen. It was a nice article, but who knows?
Yeah, we already had the crazy realignment a little while ago. I mean, that would be interesting if it happens again. But it's never based on, you know, geography, too. Now we know that. You know, it's just like whoever wants to get into your league, you do. You know, it's not – it used to be like that. But, yeah, and then to one of the things you were saying, I just feel like the rankings, you know, it's just – it's kind of a joke, I feel like, every year. You know, it comes out, like, before the season even starts. Like, I mean, I'll just guarantee you – every year, Texas is always going to be in like the top 10 or top 15, right? Before the year even starts, like, right? It's like Texas 12, you know, like, really? Like, they might not even have finished the last year in the top 25, or, you know, they might just be based on merit or whatever, but it's just because of their name. It's like Texas. And so they get a high ranking to start the season. Like, say they're like ranked seventh, right? Then they could lose one or two, and oh, they drop to 10 or 12, and then they win again. They're back to 8. Like, they already start so high that it's – they don't have to, you know – I mean, this is because who they are. You talk about a UCF. You know how long it took for them to – they're 20th. Yeah. Now they're 19. Now they're 18. Now they won 20 in a row. All right, we'll get them up to 10. You know, or like, it's so hard for them to crack like the top 10. And that's why it's so difficult. Right. And you said it last year, three or four teams ranked in the top 25 in the American. Yeah, it's great. And I agree with it, but it was like 20th, 21st, 23rd and 25th, which is okay. I get it. I mean, maybe based on last season, that was valid, but every year Texas starts in the top 10, whether they're really good or not. And then when they lose, you don't drop as bad, you know, but it's hard to get in. It's even harder to move up unless you're a name and you just get vaulted at a high ranking just to start. And then allows you that flexibility based on whatever happens in your year.
Mike, bringing things back close to home, I know you said earlier briefly when we were talking about East Carolina and that you were high on East Carolina head coach Mike Houston and the interaction you had with him a season ago. You know, obviously so proven, whether it was at two FCS schools and JMU and then the Citadel, and then obviously played for a D2 championship at Lenoir Ryan, which is here in North Carolina. So his success and having success in different ways speaks for itself. Just talk about your perception of this Pirate program and where it's headed, because we have an awful lot to work with offensively, have a quarterback, hometown kid like Holton Ahlers, and then some tremendous wideouts like C.J. Johnson, Tyler Snead, et cetera.
Yeah, well, and to start with Houston now, I mean, just a super guy, great coach, you know, did an unbelievable job, JMU, knows, you know, it was just like a perfect fit. I mean, it's like purple over to purple, you know, just like right across the way. And I was like, yeah, this is a great pickup. And just by talking to him, You know, he understands, like, I think he understands the players. He understands, like, us as the media. He's respectful. He's honest. He kind of tells it how it is. And when you come into a program and you have things you got to take care of and things you got to do, of course you got to do that kind of stuff. And, you know, he doesn't make excuses. I mean, I think it's just kind of the reality of the situation. And, you know, we respect that. And when we talk to him, we hear things, you know, we know we're not going to bring up certain stuff, and we know, you know, where they're at. I mean, you got to take care of, you know, your team. You got to bring in a couple of new players. You got to get rid of some guys. I mean, you got to handle a couple of things that, you know, went by the wayside before you got there. I mean, there's so many things as a coach, in my opinion, that you have to do. The X's and O's are kind of like, you know, maybe 10 or 15% of it, to be honest with you, especially as like a head coach in a football program. But no, I give him a lot of credit. He's a well-spoken guy. I mean, his track record speaks for itself. I think the players like playing for him. And I think he's really going to, in time, get this program up to a level where it can sustain it and be good year after year after year and just keep recharging, regrouping, recharging. And it's not going to be, oh, we had one good year and now we had the like, no, I see him bringing it up to a level where you're challenging every single year. You're always above 500. I mean, that's just like a whatever. Everybody's like wants to be way better than that, which they will. And with the fan support, that's awesome. When the fans come back, which again will be next year, unfortunately, it's not going to be this year. Like when you get your capacity, the way that stadium is meant to be, and it's 50,000 people screaming. I've been there before. I think it's an unbelievable environment. It's a tough place to play. Like you said, nobody else wants to go there and play you guys. That's another huge benefit and a feather in his cap. So when you already go to a place where you don't have to worry about winning to bring the fans back, now you might have to bring a few more back, but you're already starting at a good 30 or 40, whatever thousand. I mean, once we can be at capacity after this virus. So that's helpful. So I'm excited. The new press box and, you know, the luxury seats and all that. It's going in the right direction. And this is probably good for him that it's kind of a weird situation right now. So he can still get his legs underneath him and do what they need to do as a program, right? We have all this extra time, or most people do, and they can kind of step back and go, all right, what do we have to do better here? What can we fix? What can we do now where we're not held to the fire? Like, oh, what did you do? Like, he's had some time now to hopefully, get a few things under control that is behind the scenes that you really can't talk about, that you just know is affecting your program. But he'll get it going. I like this guy a lot.
And Mike, here's a stat for you. Last year, speaking of top 25 or top 20, East Carolina ranked 19th in the country with the 19th youngest team in the country last year. So if you add this year, but definitely by next year, 21, those guys who are freshmen will all of a sudden be seniors and juniors, which means they go from being one of the youngest teams to one of the oldest teams in that span. That's year three under Houston. I believe with that group by year three under Houston and with his players, if you look at the recruiting, I don't know if you follow recruiting, but the recruiting that East Carolina has done over the last 2 years under Houston has been some of the best ever. And I'm not just saying that. I'm not a recruiting guru, but I'm smart enough to know that the recruiting has been way above par. So when you look at factor in everything and the fact that the guy, no matter, I think the thing that I'm most impressed about Houston is the very fact that if you talk to everybody, what I've read, if you talk to everybody, wherever program, if it's a high school level in the Asheville area, was it A.C. Reynolds, Bubba? I think it's A.C. Reynolds. What was the name of the high school that he was at?
Houston was T.C. Robertson.
T.C. Robertson, excuse me. I knew that wasn't right. But if you look at T.C. Robertson, if you look at Nora Ryan, you look at the Citadel, you look at JMU, every single program that man's been at after he left is still really good. And how many guys can say that as a coaching career, if it's high school or whatever college level, that they've left a program, he left the program in really good shape. Still to this day, those programs are very good, Mike.
That's a great point. I mean, you know, sometimes when coaches leave and things happen, it's like, oh, then the new guy comes in and he's got to do a lot of, you know, cleaning up. Like we've said a little bit here, it's like, no, that shows you how good of a coach he is and a administrator, if you will, of the whole program. That if he does leave somewhere and somebody else comes in, the cupboard is stacked. The system is good. The players are respectful. They do their job. They go to class. They take care of all things they need to take care of. And you don't have as much to worry about. You know what I mean? So that's a great point. I like that, exactly right, what you just said, no doubt.
So, what about Mike? As we're starting to wind this interview down, I wanted to mention just is college football outside the obvious. Obviously, we're wondering whether we're going to even have football. But assuming we do have football this fall, what are some of the storylines around the country that you're keeping an eye on?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question, man. I wish I could give you kind of more of a, you know, interesting answer. I mean, I think everybody's just kind of taking a step back a little bit and trying to just, you know, get to the season and get through all this. I mean, I don't know. I really haven't even thought too much about, like, who's the top team, who's got the best players, because, you know, here's the thing. They all get to play, you know. Is somebody out because of the virus? Is somebody, you know, coming back? Is somebody transferring? I mean, there's just so many other questions. I wish I could, you know, say it, but I think we all want to talk about it, and people come out with this and that, and whatever. And it's like, it all might just get scrapped. Like, that's the thing. I don't mean the whole season, but your comments and what you think, you know, is going to happen. And then next week, boom, this changes, you know. And then, like, you just saw today, it's like, oh, MEAC, no football. Well, that game's off the schedule. Like, I mean, there's just so many things that change in a short amount of time, you know, weekly, monthly. I don't know. I mean, I really, you know, I'd like to say I had an idea for you. You know, even like the top teams, like the LSUs and the Clemsons, you know, it's, you know, they're always going to be right there, I think. I mean, even without Joe Burrow, say LSU, right? I mean, they're going to have somebody, right? They're going to reload. It's just, Orgeron's done an amazing job. But it's like, you could see how, like, the difference of, you know, one season or one year or one game or whatever it is. I mean, they want to run that guy out of town, you know? The next year they win the national championship. It's like, you know, I think about things just in life in general sometimes, and not to get, you know, off sports for you, but I remember Aaron Rodgers back in the day. I don't know. There's something going on. They lost like two games in a row or something. I don't know, in Green Bay. And he just goes, you know, everybody just relax. R-E-L-A-X, and he like just spells it out like relax. And it's like, you know, sometimes I try to think of that and I go, yeah, we just have to kind of relax a little bit right now. Like, there's like, what are we gonna do? What about this? What that? Just, it's gonna play itself out. There's always so much we can do personally. We have to be positive, think for the best. And I'm excited to hopefully think there will be a season. And if not, we will get through this time period, and then there will be, and we can actually really talk football, X's and O's, players, coaches, and who's going to beat who. But I don't even know if they're going to play and if they can even get on the field. So it's just hard to kind of make assumptions and, you know, stuff like right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, when I think of Aaron Rodgers, I think of two things. I think of a tremendous quarterback, and I think of discount double check.
Exactly. That's the greatest commercials.
Mike, as far as I'm a broadcasting nerd, so – I know you've done great work in football. What other sports have you called? And are there, as a two-parter, and the second part of the question, if you haven't called the sport, would you, what other sports that you would like to do?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously the main ones, like you said, football, basketball, and I do lacrosse. That's what I do in the springtime, which I really enjoy. I think it's a great sport. It's growing a lot on the high school level, not as so much on the college, only because it's not as many teams, but it'll get there someday. But yeah, I mean, I've been very fortunate to do field hockey for the Olympics, which I was hoping to do again this summer. Yeah, and it got postponed, as we all know. But I've done the last three Summer Olympics doing the play-by-play for the field hockey. So I enjoy that. I've done speed skating at the Olympics before as well on radio with Westwood One. That's always been, you know, interesting and a challenge, you know, and covering stuff like that. I've done the MMA before a couple times. I got asked to do that. Yeah, which was interesting. Had to learn that sport. Even a water polo, you know, game match before I've done. You know, a lot of different stuff. You know, I try not to, you know, you try to take as many opportunities and things as you can. And you work on it and you learn the sport, you talk to people, you get to know the rules, and you just go from there. But yeah, those, the three main ones, football, basketball, and lacrosse. But I enjoy doing all that other stuff. I mean, it's a great challenge, and, you know, the Olympics is kind of like a dream, you know, to be able to be fortunate enough to do that, you know, and appeal to such a mass audience. Hopefully that'll come back. We'll have all that squared away for next summer. But yeah, no, it's been fun. I enjoy it all, really. But yeah, I mean, I love football. I mean, basketball is probably the easier one. You know, I always tell people because it's just less to prepare for, and it's, you know, 2 hours. You're indoors. It's climate controlled, and it's just, you know, it's easier. You can just run up and talk to a player before the game. You know what I mean? You can go in the locker room and hit the coach. I mean, that's the one thing, you know, with football, it's like, it's such an ordeal sometimes, you know. I'd love to have the access that we have, like with basketball, you know.
Now, Mike, I did have a quick question now that you're talking about the broadcasting perspective and, you know, dealing with the elements and so forth in football. Sometimes, depending on the press box facility you're in, East Carolina had the new Town Bank Tower being unveiled last year. Talk briefly about that. And had you done a game in the old press box at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium, I guess, in 2017?
Yeah, I have. I did games there back in the day, and I thought it was fine. I mean, from our, you know, vantage point perspective, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that the thing was, you know, needed to be upgraded, which, I mean, that's, of course, it's great. But I mean, I was okay with our position and whatnot, you know, beforehand. But then, yeah, I did two games during the construction. So we were going up on that, you know, makeshift elevator on the outside of the stadium. And we were in there, and we had like some crates and boxes to, like, you know, get up our snack guy so he had some room to be able to have. And, you know, and it was hot. And of course, they had the little porta potty on the thing. And, you know, there wasn't the food, the spread you normally used to. I mean, you know, like, we're so spoiled anyway. It's like, but I mean, it's, we did that twice. So that was a little bit of a challenge, you know, just because you're, and I'm not like looking for amenities, like, oh, I need my food and this and that, but it's just be able to go down and get the notes or talk to, you know, Tom McClellan or, you know, any of those guys, or go to the regular bathroom, you know, that would have been, but it would have been nice. But I think it's going to be amazing. And I'm so looking forward to doing, you know, games there, you know, once we get back going again, because it just looks awesome. You know, maybe you guys give me a little bit more of a heads up on what it is if you've been up there, but it seems to be really, really cool.
Yeah, I have. I've been up there. The it's just a great feeling with the press box. Something that was long overdue. It only took the university 40 years to get it. 41, I guess. So hopefully it won't take 41 years to get another press box. So, but anyway, we can't worry about that right now, because financially it's that's a whole another show about the press box. But it is very nice, and certainly. For the media, Kyle teases me because the pregame meals up there are fantastic. And, I do go up there and do some work, a quarter or two a game. I don't know about you. I know you're broadcasting the game, but it's a nice feel to be able to have. There's my son, Alexander, making a cameo. But anyway, the very fact of Kyle teases me because of the going up there to the press box and, you know, how come you aren't the fans? I do like to be in the stadium, and I have season tickets, four seats in section two, but it is something about that. I'll tell you one thing. It's a lot. The thing about that press box is for the media is working right on the same floor you guys are. It is very high up compared to the old press box, the double wide in the sky.
Well, that's it. I mean, I'm not a yeah, when you're really high up, I mean, that's, you know, the binoculars. I love to be able to call games without using the binoculars. You know, it just makes it so much easier, so you can kind of get the wide view. But I'll be interested to see how the perspective is and how high up you are. I don't know if you guys have ever been to, like, say Akron, to be honest with you. Like, I did a couple games there, you know, like Maction on those Tuesday, Wednesday night deals. And you're literally, like, staring down at the field, like you're looking at the top of their helmets. Like, that's an unbelievable stadium. I think like LeBron James had something to do with, you know, putting the whole thing together, and it's a beautiful press box. I mean, we're talking for Akron, you know what I mean? It's unbelievable. But you're so high up and you're so close to like the sideline, you honestly have to like lean over so you can see the sideline below you. I mean, it's like, I know it's about money. I hate to keep going back to this. It's about money though, because if they talk to every single person and actually used it and what you were looking for and what you needed, every design of a new press box, suites, whatever, would be exactly what the broadcasters and people are looking for. But there's always something, right? They're like, oh, we had this, but then we had to save some money here and we couldn't do that. And then the windows don't open. It's like, why would the windows not open? It's like, well, it's a cost thing. It's money. Like, I mean, it's like, it just makes no sense, right? You know? So I hope it's, to everybody's liking, but that's usually what happens, right? You know, quarters get cut, things get dropped, and you're like, did you even talk to anybody about this or what they needed? You know?
Yeah, you describing the Akron press box and that vantage point you had, it sounds like you're the human sky cam, like you're strapped to the
camera. Exactly.
That was fun. Well, Mike, how can people follow you before we let you go? How can they follow you on social media? And we're looking forward to whenever the season is, if it's 20, 21, 22, 23, I don't know. Everything seems to get pushed back so much. How can people follow you on social media?
Yeah, no, thanks so much. Just at Mike Corey Sports. That's pretty much my handle for whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Just at Mike Corey Sports. And then the same for the website, www.mikecoreysports.com. And it's been fun. I'm trying to keep up like you guys and just doing a few interviews here and there, talking to, you know, as many people as we can to get a perspective on, you know, not just the sports, but also what we can do during this time just to be better. You know what I mean? Like I've really spent a lot of time at just trying to become a better, you know, person. I mean, you know, husband, father, also personally, like health wise, like I lost, to be honest with you, over 30 pounds. I mean, I wasn't like completely overweight, but I needed to. I lost 30 pounds. I'm eating better. And I'm just trying to do a little bit less, you know, like we're always trying to do more, more, more. And with all this that's happened, I'm like, you know what? What's most important, you know? So I'm trying to do a little bit of self-reflection too and, you know, just be better with things and, you know, and do the best I can. So I'm trying to use that time effectively. So hopefully, and reading too, I've been reading a lot more, picking up a lot of good stuff there too. So, yeah, I'm with you. Hopefully things will get back. And when they do, you know, we should all be better at it, you know, and take the positives out of this, you know, which I think are going to be good once we get through the rough patch. But thank you. It's always good to talk to you guys. I appreciate you having me on and, you know, hopefully we'll be throwing the football around real soon.
Well, that's the plan, and we'll have you on. Hopefully, we can have you on during the season to talk some college football, talk sports. That would be what a concept, right?
I know. We'd love it. We'd love it. That'd be great.
Thanks, man. Enjoy the rest of your summer. Enjoy your time with the Jersey Shore.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Okay. Thanks, Dave. Right. You guys are great. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Mike.
Have a good one. Wow. What a great show. Appreciate Mike very much. He is awesome. And, certainly, with the American and ESPN, we're very happy with the TV deal. We're very happy with the broadcasters. And I know that I pay more attention to it because that's what I love. I'm in broadcasting and I love it. So those guys are fantastic and look forward to whenever the season is. But I tell you, it's hard to believe. I think that you'd have a better chance to predict the lottery numbers than if we're going to play college football or not. Maybe not. Maybe we know deep down that we're not going to be playing, but hopefully we can keep our fingers crossed that we will. And we'll keep certainly with the news today of I guess MEAC sports as far as the conference is concerned. We've lost Norfolk State September 19th. We got that on there, right there on the ticker, as a matter of fact, on the screen for you. So September 19th, who's available, Bubba?
Yeah, put me on the spot there, Dave. I know what you're trying to do, but no, App State, as you guys say, my favorite team. I guess the Pirates come second now, but no, the Mountaineers are available on the 19th of September. They were scheduled to go up to Camp Randall and play the Badgers. Of course, that was going to be a huge opportunity for that program, and I was really looking forward to following that one. But the Big Ten made that decision several days ago now. They'll be playing conference only, and I think that's where we're probably headed, to be honest, with everybody. And at this point, playing 8 or 9 games would be tremendous because it looks like less and less all the time that we'll have football in 2020. But as far as App State's concerned, hey, if I'm John Gilbert, and who knows, maybe something like this has already happened. I know when you're in that role, you always have your contingency plans. You have a plan, not only A, but B, C, D, E, F, G. I mean, you have
all
a
ton Z, of right?
options and have them ready to roll should something like this arise. And I would certainly get the Mountaineers or someone tentatively on the schedule should football be played in 2020.
Oh, absolutely. And let me just say how much I know for the fact that East Carolina is my school, but Appalachian State, I have much respect for that program. I think they have a tremendous athletic director. They have great facilities. I love the people in Boone. I went my freshman year to Banner Elk, to Lees McRae College. Appalachian State is a beautiful campus. I have nothing but great things to say about them. And I think it makes perfect sense. Let me just say this too, for our fan base that don't think that Appalachian State is a great school. First of all, it's a in-state rival. Number one. Number two, we have tradition back before probably you were born, in the '70s for some of you, in the SoCon Conference where we played each other all the time. And I just think it makes sense. And then you look at the financial climate we're in right now where Appalachian State is a bus ride and not an airplane ride. There's all great things about it. So I'm talking about in normal times, people need to get over whatever it is. They don't think that's a name. That's a brand name team. They won three national championships back to back to back at the FCS level. They've done nothing but big things in now that they're in the years they've been in the FBS. So they've had great coaches and they've built a tremendous program there. And I think it makes perfect sense in every facet, they check all the, I mean, you can check off of a checklist of everything you would want. And the fact that we're playing them and Boone is going to be cool. They're coming here. We have the game where we'll have in Charlotte. I mean, I think it's next year, right, Bubba? So, I mean, it's coming up. Yeah. So, yeah. And so I, you know, Appalachian State doesn't need me to push them up, you know, a hype video like maybe it's now, but I don't understand our fan base sometimes. That's a constructive criticism. I don't care who the Pirates play. I'm going to be there regardless, but I think Appalachian State is a great game for East Carolina, period. End of story. Drop the mic.
Yeah, I agree. That's what a lot of folks, I mean, playing Appalachian on a consistent basis and maybe not necessarily condoning, promoting App State, joining the AAC. I mean, those are two different conversations, obviously. But no, I'm certainly in favor of playing them on a pretty regular basis. They bring a lot to the table, excellent atmosphere, like you said, and have had an awful lot of success. Do I think if they were in the American that they would have won as many games as they have? No. But do I think if over the last few years with the way we struggled, if we were playing their schedule, do I think we'd have won anywhere as close to many games as they have? No. But hopefully our program will continue to trend up under Coach Houston and staff. I certainly think it will. And it could make for a tremendous football game that first Thursday of the season next year when these teams kick it off in Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte.
No doubt about it, and it's going to be fantastic. And that's the Duke's Classic, right? Duke's Mayonnaise Classic. So,
yeah,
whoever wins the game gets a jar of mayonnaise. So, a good mayonnaise there, Duke's Mayonnaise. So great. I'm glad for Charlotte they have that sponsor, and I think it's cool. And I'm glad what they're doing, and I'm glad that we're part of that with App. And I bet you anything, Bank of America has like 73,000, just a little and some change, for the stadium. I bet you that next year, I bet you between the two fan bases, that's going to be a lot of fans in the stadium. And it may not, I know Georgia and Clemson play, I believe that, the first game of that series of the classic, but you know what? I bet you we have a 60, 70,000 easily in that stadium next year. I really believe that.
Yeah, you look at it, Dave, a lot of folks just not really looking at things, taking a deeper dive into things, to use that famous phrase that we heard when Dave Hart was taking the deep dive into the program. But as you look at things with East Carolina and App State, these two programs have only met twice since the 1970s. They played in 2009 in Greenville, a game that came down to the wire after the Pirates built a large early lead, and then in 2012, and the Mountaineers came to Greenville. So this will be the first time the programs have met in 8 years, or excuse me, 9 years by the time the game rolls around, and only the third time they've met in, what, about 45 years. So I definitely like the matchup, and I assure you the Mountaineer fan base will be ready for it. That goes without saying, and hopefully Pirate Nation will be the same. And some folks look at it and say, oh, there won't be more than probably about 35,000 there. And we'll see. That may be the case. But don't be surprised if there's – I mean, some of these games that have been played there, whether it's South Carolina and North Carolina, the ticket prices are so high for those matchups. I would not be surprised to see this one have comparable attendance to that because the tickets are more affordable. Like I said, it's a matchup you rarely get between two interstate rivals, in-state rivals. And because of that, I would not be shocked to see 55 or 60,000 in that Bank of America stadium for that season opener in 2021.
No doubt it's going to be great, and look forward to having any kind of sports, man. I tell you what, NASCAR we have right now, I know that some MMA fans are happy that they have that. And so we're going to be able to hopefully have end of the month, we'll have NBA, and then August 1st, we'll have NHL. We need to get our friend Mike Maniscalco back on. We'll try to do that towards the end of the month, I guess. There's another person we need to have on because the season's getting ready to be finished up. I was going to say cranked up, but it's, I guess, finished the year. So we'll see about how the Hurricanes will do, and certainly the NHL and the Major League Baseball. I mean, hopefully we have some of this, but we'll have to wait and see, Bubba. I'm done. How about you? You got anything before we go?
One of the interesting things I saw here recently, I thought about it, and you mentioned in Major League Baseball and it getting cranked up here, I guess, about a week from now, on a 60-game schedule. I know I was unsure exactly how many umpires there were in the game. I think the article said 76. But of those 76 Major League Baseball umpires, 20 are ages 55 and up. And 10 umpires, I don't know the ages of the ones who have opted out. They may not all necessarily be above 55. I would imagine a lot are, but 10 of the 76 umpires have opted out of this season. So it's going to be very interesting bringing some minor league umpires up. And like Brett Boone said when he was on the program a few weeks back, playing only 60 games, you could have someone that wouldn't be in the hunt if you're playing 100 or much less 162 in a typical season. Maybe have an opportunity to win a championship, whether there's an asterisk by it or not.
No doubt. And Joe West, of course, the Greenville native, I believe he is in his 60s, I believe. Maybe I'll have to think my math off the top of my head. I believe he could be he may be one of those guys, one of those 10s, I would think, because he's been in the league so long and is such a great umpire. I love that guy. And the fact he's from Greenville is even more special. But maybe we can have him on sometime. It'll be really cool. But, Bubba, I tell you what, very excited about all the stuff we've had going on. 50 Pirates in 50 days. We've got that going on. A lot of great content there. We put up we have all kinds of shows going on right now. And I know tomorrow we have one of our favorites, Phil Steele's, coming on tomorrow, and maybe some other surprise guests tomorrow afternoon.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward, and there's a big announcement today with the American Athletic Conference. I'm just talking about the things the American are going to do as far as testing protocols and the different standards. So we'll talk about that and a whole lot more with the commissioner of the American Athletic Conference, Mike Oresko. You mentioned 50 Pirates in 50 days tonight. Myself and possibly Kyle Barber. We'll see if Kyle is able to take part, but we'll be joined by Leonard Paulk. Leonard's a native of the Palmetto State, but played for the Pirates from 2008 to 2012, defensive back for Skip Holtz and then Ruffin McNeil. And look forward to catching up with Leonard. I believe he's actually still in Greenville, even though he's a native of South Carolina, I want to say Columbia. But looking forward to reminiscing about his Pirate career and talking all things Pirate football, past and present. And then also, we apologize. Last night, we were going to have Greg Gardell, who was a defensive lineman on that 1991 Peach Bowl team. Unfortunately, that didn't work out last night, but he will be now 8 p.m. tomorrow night. So, and like you mentioned, tomorrow morning prior to us recording that phone interview with Phil Steele, which will be, traditional audio format. We have Trent Tigner, who punted for the Pirates. Trent, I believe, is back in his native Georgia, and we'll talk Pirate football and his experience with Trent Tigner.
That's going to be fantastic. Fans, I tell you what, we're so excited, all the great things happening for the show. And by the way, if you want to advertise on the show, we can put your – we can put your ad on the screen as well. You can just simply email us, thesportsobj@gmail.com, thesportsobj@gmail.com, and we'll get in contact with you. Love to have you a part of the show, right? Like where below where Bubba is in that bottom right corner, you can have your business right there. Love to have you. And certainly at that point where we can definitely take advertisers now. So love to have you on. And certainly fans, if you would like to see a certain guest on, or maybe your former pirate and you want to get in contact with the show, that same email address at thesportsobj@gmail.com. Well, appreciate our great guests. It's been a fantastic show today. And thanks, Steve Rockerford. And thanks to Mike, too. Appreciate him coming on. Mike Corey, I tell you what, it's been a fantastic show and lots of great stuff to come, Bubba. Thank you so much for your hard work. I appreciate you very much. I know that you're husband and father and coach, and certainly, he does it all. He's like me. We've got more side hustles than anybody in the country. And I don't know how many hours you log in every week, Bubba, but you and I are both way up there. So thanks, man. I appreciate you. Respect you. And he's like a brother to me. Appreciate it very much. And he's like my brother from the western part of the state. So anyway, I had a great time, Bubba. Thank you so much. And fans, thanks to all of you. If you want to see any of our interviews, what you can do is simply go to Facebook Live. We have them archived there, Facebook rather, and they're archived there, and our YouTube channel as well. All right, until next time, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Go Pirates!
You've been listening to The Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.